This is what my son sang to me yesterday morning.
Yeah.
He said, it's raining, it's snoring. The old man is, and then he looked at the roof and said, no, it's early. Grandpa's probably up by now. And that made my day.
I like that.
I like. How old is he?
Nine. About to turn 10.
Right, I had a new one from the girlfriend's kid. It was like, if you sprinkle when you tinkle, be a sweetie and wipe the city. She does this whole dance of like,
that's fun.
Really awful. Wait,
okay, so you sang. Now we're going to get everybody to sing?
Nobody wants to hear
that. No.
Just make motorcycle sounds. That's good.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thanks
for having us.
Welcome back, Mike.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for organizing this and putting this all together. I was excited when you first told me about it.
Yeah. It'd be
like,
cool.
This is great. Like
big meeting of the minds of different levels of trades. And
we got like the educators, and then we've got the kids that are that learn.
Kids.
It's a compliment for you, Mike.
You're I appreciate that. I think I'm older than you.
You are older than I am.
I am older than you. I know. I'm the second oldest.
And you taught him?
I taught him.
You taught me.
Yeah.
And when did you leave?
I left the college in 2022.
Okay.
Yeah, 22.
And you got your own business going on right now?
I do. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Cool. So I just do my own thing out of my own shop at home. It's been amazing.
Nice. We're going to get into it. So this is going to be a great conversation. Sure. We're going to talk about the education system. We're going to talk about the teaching and the trade and the woodworking and the business and all kinds of stuff.
I thought of some questions for you along the lines this time as well.
Did you bring them?
They're
in your head.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's no trick questions or anything. It's just stuff from
I'll
after
answer
the last
almost
podcast.
Anything.
I know you will. You got good opinions on things too. It'd be interesting.
I'm not afraid of questions. I've had people come in here, turn the mic on me. I'm like, okay, that's go good. Ahead. I'm an open book.
It's good podcast.
I'm not the woodworkers that you guys are. I'm not. I appreciate it. Totally. I will always appreciate it. But you guys have craft. You have skill. Yeah. Simple as that, right? Sure. So one by one, let's introduce everybody. Starting off with Gavin here. If you want to introduce yourself to the audience.
Sure, yeah. I'm Gavin Godreau, 23 years old, cabinet maker. Got my red seal. What? When did I tell you I got my red seal? About a year and 2 years ago?
2 years ago, yep.
Yep. Brand new
foreman in your shop it. Though yeah. Don't play it down foreman in your shop.
Oh yeah, foreman at the shop I'm at now for probably 2 years as well, so yep.
It's wise beyond his years.
And you guys work together?
We partnered up a lot at school and
yeah.
still are in touch and kind of text back and forth about what we're working on.
That was so good about the other conversation that we had with Trevor. We were talking about how once you got in there the first I guess month of being a student, you start figuring out who you're going to be working with or who you can kind of connect with, right?
Yeah.
Which is really cool.
That group of five. And
we instantly started our own Conestoga business of like the five of us.
You guys became one.
Yeah. We're very symbiotic.
We had Riley for a bit, but he dropped.
Yeah. Poor guy. Yeah.
I still talk to him.
Good.
And then your IG. I've got it all written down, but it's all on this.
Godreau 13.
Yeah. And it's at GAUDREAULT13. The number 13.
Right. See more wildlife pictures than woodworking pictures on there.
No, you're a fisherman.
Hunting.
Yes,
yeah,
hunting
totally.
And fishing.
Totally. Yep.
He's a good northern boy.
There's nothing wrong with that at all. So,
So I'm Jamie Roberts. I am a Red Seal cabinet maker officially. I ran my own business for about 14 years doing custom woodworking, cabinetry, furniture, whatever. I taught at the college part-time and full-time for almost 5 years, I guess. And then now I am currently running my own business just out of my shop at home.
Under your name?
Under my name, Jamie Roberts Custom Woodworking. Gives me an opportunity to see my wife and children that I'm not going to lie, neglected for a few years when I was running my own business. So it's been awesome being at home and seeing my kids and my wife a little bit more. So
it's a woodworking show and therapy.
Yeah, exactly.
Great. You can get him on IG at Jamie Robert Custom Woodworking. And also his email to reach him is jrobertscustomwoodworking@gmail.com.
Correct.
Correct. Right. And then we have James.
Yeah. My name's James Gertson. I'm also a Red Seal certified cabinet maker. I teach. I'm a professor of woodworking at Conestoga College, Dune campus. My background, I kind of started out at the college I'm teaching now in that same program. I teach the program now that I took and worked in the industry for about 14 years in all sorts of different aspects, from luxury yacht interiors to stairs and railings to custom cabinetry and furniture. And then moved into the teaching role. So that's where I've landed up in a nutshell.
You going to hang out there for a little bit?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, I really enjoy it. I think it's giving back that I want to do to everything that I've learned so far.
What's the best part? Like all the new crop of kids that are coming in? And when I say kids, I mean the young ones, but also the career-changing ones too.
Not necessarily that. That's true, but I really love seeing the progression, like seeing where they start, and then when they graduate, how much they've learned and how much they've accomplished, and seeing them develop and actually put those skills and knowledge to use. That's what I really like seeing.
Oh, you don't think you didn't think I was going to make? You knew right away I was going to make.
You changed my career.
Did I? You're welcome. You're welcome.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We'll get into that totally. Yeah, okay, and then Mike, you're back on the mic as well too, right?
Yeah,
thanks. Yeah, and well, you want to recap? You could recap.
Former paramedic, career change into woodworking and sort of accidental woodworking and success in that, just by way of making things, and then realizing that I was encouraged to get a formal education in it, to have the background in it, to kind of keep business going. So here I am.
I'm curious to start off with, how was Gavin and how was Mike coming into the school that first period?
Like when we first met them?
Yeah.
They acted like they knew everything already.
Really?
they were very confident people. And, and
confident or competent?
No, confident. Talking. Sure. Not competent yet, but
you're working on it.
No, they were good students who actually, you know, they listened and they went out and did what they told efficiently. Didn't mess around. When it came to work, it was time to work. And that's what I love seeing from any student. You know, they listen well, they pay attention, and they go and do it. They listen to your instruction, and you see that performance happen. And that really adds to success of learning, right? Of being able to apply what you've taught them. And
What do you guys want the students to be like when they come into your environment for the first time? Like, they've heard so many great things about that school. Mm-hmm. They've heard so many great things about that program. And what are you guys hoping that they show up? Or is it a blank slate?
Not always.
I don't think anybody comes in with a blank slate.
No, I think they have some ideas, right?
Yeah, you know, they've worked in their uncle's garage or in their parents' shop at home or for a friend and whatever. And that's great. That's a great foundation to start with. But I mean, as long as they're open to new concepts or new ways of doing things for us to show them maybe more efficient methods of doing certain things, or just communicating, like raising their hand if they have questions, not sitting quietly in the back corner and then we don't know if they've understood or not. I think that's really important, is communication between student and teacher and vice versa.
Yeah.
Which plays a big role, because you can't help them if you don't know, they're not understanding.
I think that's kind of why our group did so well, is because we all had a fairly diverse background from where we came with a lot of different, like a lot of age gaps and a lot of different experiences. And we already kind of knew how to do things, but our question was always like, why are we doing it this way at Conestoga? And it was just
a little bit of challenge.
Not so much a challenge. It's, I wanted to understand, like, the way that I've been doing it has been working it, and the way that you're showing me is different than the way that I know how to do it.
Yeah.
So it's, what part of the standard am I not aware of that I need to learn to go?
Yeah, I would say where your class excelled for sure was just the ability to be willing to learn.
Yeah.
And put your own kind of like, well, I've always done it this way.
Yeah. What is this tool and how can I use it best?
Because woodworking, and we've talked about this, me and you, Mike, forever, is that like woodworking's a cool trade that there's not one definitive path to get to the end result.
No, there isn't. We had a whole conversation about that on lunch today.
Exactly. Yeah. You start at one point and you get to the end point, and I might teach you one way and James might teach you a different way.
Yeah.
And we're both not wrong.
No.
And we're both not 100% right.
But that piece of wood comes out
exactly
the same dimension,
same way. And then what I always tried to teach students when I was there was that depending on what shop you're working in, they might have a different process because they might have different machinery. They might have a different way of doing things. And it's not that this way is right, wrong, or better than the way that we're doing. It's just the process that works for that shop. So it's kind of, you guys were really good at understanding that and knowing that there is a different path to get there. Mm-hmm. And I always tried to teach you guys, like, you know, this is how we do it at the college. This is how I did it in my shop. This is how another shop might do it. And there's all these different ways to do it. Cause that's what I really love about woodworking is that there's so many different ways to get to the end result. When you're an electrician, you're putting a wire in and you kind of got to do it that one way or else somebody gets hurt.
Yeah.
And in woodworking, you can get that board through, there's four different machines that could do that same task, and it's sure. which one works the best for the way you're trying to do it, yeah. which is what I think is kind of
you're cool. in a unique position because you before you're teaching, you're in trades, right?
Correct. Yeah. So I.
So how does it to go from trades to teacher back to trades?
So that's why I'm back to trades. I took the same program that James did. So okay. back in the early 2000s, I graduated from the woodworking program, and then I worked for a few places, and then I had the opportunity to buy my own business and took it on in 2008, and kind of ran it up until 2021, and I was part time teaching from 2017, 2018 on. And it was awesome. And I really loved doing the business and, you know, running things and doing all that. But it's like a lot of small business owners will tell you is that it's demanding on your personal life. Uh-huh. So transitioning to teaching was a great way for me to sell the business, get to something where I had a little more personal time. And then through that, I realized that, you know what, I really liked being on the tools. I like talking to customers. I like doing this. I love the education aspect of things. And the college has given me tons of relationships with Gavin and Mike. And I have probably 30 other former students and employees that still talk to me. And Mike came and used my shop, 2 weeks ago?
Yep.
And there's eight or nine other guys that already, even though I've had my shop up and running for 3 months, I've had lots of people come and say, you know what, I don't have this machine. Can I come and use your shop and blah, blah, blah. And if you have a past relationship with me, my standard is you can come and use my shop as long as we're safe and we know what we're doing and you don't use any material or consumables, it's no charge.
So just making a list here of your shop where it's located. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tools
you have in there. You're not on that list yet, but we can get you there.
We'll see how we're at the end of this.
But for me, it's given back to students that are willing to, you know, put in the time and learn. Because I mean, I started like a lot of people did, is in my dad's garage at home. I had a rinky dink set of tools that, and you know, for me to do anything, my dad's a car guy, so he has two old classic cars that I had to push out of the garage and get out of the way and then set my tools up that were on, you know, rollers and everything. And it was an hour.
Example of a guy with an awful lot to offer,
yeah,
who was very successful in his professional life as the business owner, the furniture maker, who brought so much to the table to teach, but has such a passion for it that he actually managed to step away from it to get back on the tools.
Yeah. And what I love about what I'm doing now is that I'm doing all the things I loved about my business, and I'm doing them at home with my family. So I'm in a unique position where I put the time in and I did all of the, I used to work 7 days a week. I put 70, 80 hours in like a lot of trades guys did. And I did that and I made the decision to step away from that to be with my family. And then I was teaching. I worked at another kitchen place as a general manager there for a year and a half, kind of getting them up and going. And I was at the point where I'm like, you know what? I got this shop at home that I built while I was teaching and kind of got it finished because teachers get a lot of time off that James knows.
Easy. I don't get that sense because I'm pretty sure you're bombarded with a bunch of emails or texts or interests.
It's a tough go. Yeah.
Right now it's end of semester. So yeah.
I'm pretty sure that everybody who's learning is like, I got a question. I could reach out.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Teaching is super demanding.
I encourage it.
I think every successful tradesperson does that.
Yeah. Yeah.
They wanted to share that, right?
Yeah. So anyway, like I said, I'm in a unique position where I'm at the point where I have 20 years of clients that I've dealt with in the past and a long list of interior designers and construction guys and tradespeople and everybody that I've built these relationships with. So I'm at the point where I can kind of pick and choose what I do and take the work that I want to do and the work that I can handle. And I get to do it from home. I get to drive my kids to school in the morning. I see them when they come home from school. And it's been a great past couple of months for me. So,
Gavin, when you got started, did you see yourself being the foreman on this particular position? Was that already on the horizon?
Yes and no. Growing up, I was always considered like a leader with whatever I was doing. Now when I first started cabinetry, I came from other trades that were a little bit faster paced. And so I was a bit of a bull in the China shop when I first started. And, a lot of mistakes led me to learning how to fix said mistakes before the boss found out. So I can,
woodworking.
I can avoid the mistakes now. And I think that's got me to the position that I'm in now.
Okay.
Just trial and error and lots of it.
And it's going well?
It's going very well.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're lucky that you found that?
Yeah. Yeah, I started my high school co-op where I am now. So as I've been started right at the bottom there, and then having we had a foreman for the first 3 years I was there, and then he quit. We had a couple other in and out, nothing really worked. So we just needed someone to step up. Sure enough, yeah, awesome. I'll give it a go.
And then I guess with schooling, you guys probably, I'm assuming with this particular craft, there's a lot more of open dialogue versus other kind of career options, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's, because it's such a broad...
You guys aren't afraid, when I say that, you guys aren't afraid to tell the truth to the student, and the student's not afraid to ask the question.
No, exactly. And you know, sometimes you tell them, you know, you want to point out a mistake so they learn, but people can't be offended or upset if they make that mistake, because there's a million different things you could be building in woodworking. And it's such a broad field that it's not a specific, like Jamie said before, it's not a specific set of rules for every single thing. There's multiple ways to go about doing it. So I think understanding where certain mistakes are made and being acceptance of that feedback can really benefit, you know.
There was one question that I asked the other group. I was like, do the kids, or did you, Mike, as well, like, did you guys bite off more than you could chew when you were talking about your project that you had to build, that you had to get ready for?
I would say yeah.
Okay. But I'm assuming a lot of them did?
No. Mine was just on a scale that, because in second year, COVID was already kind of going. So most of trade school was online, and we had to do a bill of sale or a bill of materials, right? Mm-hmm. And the price difference, because we're planning our third year project in second year. Okay. So by the time third year rolled around, what my project cost was exponentially higher than what it was when I planned it.
Did you reevaluate it?
And I didn't know coming into third year that, like, you're locked in on this. So I spent a pretty penny on my finishing project. Yeah.
What was it?
It was a liquor cabinet. It was...
A really nice liquor cabinet.
Several $1,000.
Was the liquor part of the budget?
No, liquor wasn't part of the budget. No, and I probably throw myself under the bus here, but I completely, like, why wouldn't you take advantage of getting to use like a 40,000 square foot workshop to build something that is, for all intents and purposes, I'm going to finish very nicely and then probably sell when I bring it home. So that was the plan. Made it. It was nice. Sold it to somebody in Toronto. And
nice. So it worked.
Ta-da.
The risk.
Yeah, it was expensive to finish. That was the only part that was biting off more than I could chew. I was trying to figure out how I was going to pay for food, gas, commuting from St. Catharines to Cambridge.
Was that hamster just like spinning around when you were building it?
Oh, smoke coming off of the wheels. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. How am I going to pull this? What scrap can I rape and pillage from what I already have at home?
I've never seen work so stressed.
Really? Yeah.
I don't get stressed.
Well, it was a complex project. It was pretty awesome. It was a lot. You made but it wasn't work. The wood that was expensive. It was that fancy wallpaper you picked. That's where the money was.
Oh, remember that? Son of a. I couldn't finish it because what came on the roll, it wasn't a full roll. So it was meant to cover a certain square footage, and I had that square footage already allotted to kind of create a patterned interior to this cabinet. And when I pulled the roll out, it was like 6 inches too short. So I had to, it was another $160 for another roll. I still have the roll sitting in my shop.
Just to get.
And I had to finish it up. Was like 3 feet of it that I needed to do the rest of the ones because it was too short.
There was no other way.
There was no way of matching the pattern. Yeah, I had to get another roll.
Yeah, but look what you made, right?
Yeah,
I know it was stressful back then.
Yeah,
but you made it work. And would you do it differently?
Yes, I would buy two rolls.
As far as a project go, you wouldn't do a simpler project. Maybe change the species or some of that stuff. But I think what you made, you're proud of, and I think it made you
absolutely.
I think it made you a lot of what you are today. Yeah. Doing a simpler project, you wouldn't.
Every time I make something, I look at it and go, okay, I would do this piece a little bit different. Yeah. That joint would be a little bit different. This wood grain, I'm going to shape it that way a little bit more. Mm-hmm.
But I think it made you confident in the stuff you're doing now because you took on a more complex project. A lot of problem solving with that one.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. There were other people that were done theirs, and I was like
still going
down to the minute on mine.
How many hours did you?
It was 2 months of class time getting it done, and then still had permission from O'Reilly, right? Yeah.
Yep.
To work on it at home after hours just to stay on schedule. Yeah. And I took pictures of doing a practice run on much of the build to see how the materials were going to go and like what my layers were going to be for.
What was the inspiration from? Like, where'd you?
I didn't have a liquor cabinet at home, so
he was thirsty.
But you ended up selling it, like, so. I'm just trying to think of where the sketching, like, where did it just all start?
The inspiration. It's the same thing I told you on the last podcast with you. Just all these different places that I've been, and the colors that I see, and the patterns and color combinations. Yeah. I see things and go, this would look awesome in that shape with this kind of wood material, and I go, it's something that nobody else has done before. I want to make some designers raise their eyebrows and go, I didn't need you to do this.
You guys are in the same boat. What were the projects that you guys
created? No offense to any designers. Or anything.
Mine? Oh, jeez. That's a long time ago.
Don't remember it?
It was this curved... Yeah, it was for... I made this little curved table with curved drawers, mirror, almost like a makeup table almost. Eventually, I had plans of passing it down to my daughter if I ever had one. I didn't know at the time. I just thought it was kind of neat. But I got inspiration because I liked older antique furniture, and I saw it at my grandparents' place. I thought, oh, I'll make something more newer of it.
There's no rules version. For this project, right?
Like, there's rules. Yeah, so there's certain things. So I've been teaching the course to the level two apprentices. They just finished up the same process Mike went through and Gavin went through. But they have to meet certain criteria. So it has to be a certain size, has to meet storage requirements. Yeah, you're
not doing a tray.
I try to say, you know, play to 80% of your strengths and maybe 20% of it is something new to you. You haven't challenged yourself with, or you don't get exposure to doing certain curves or certain hardware.
Okay.
You know, so that's where
finishing techniques
can help with that, and they can learn that process. But it also has to have a moving component. So either some form of hardware or moving, like a drawer, a door, a flap, a lid. So it does have to, and it has to have one complex component. So something that isn't just cut square on a table saw or a miter saw. So there
an inlay or something.
An inlay, yeah, something challenging. Because we want it to not just be built really fast and just make it look nice. We want it to challenge the students. We want them to learn new things while they're building it, but also enjoy learning new techniques and maybe something they don't get exposure to at their workplace. You know, some places, if you're building cabinets, no problem. You can build boxes and doors and shelves all day long, but maybe you don't get exposure to anything curved.
Yep.
Whereas if you're in a stair and railing industry, you can be dealing with winding staircases curves all day long.
You're doing bent laminations. Is it wiggle wood that you're veneering?
Yeah. And I mean, different places, as we've talked about, do different processes differently. But if you're at a job where you don't get exposure to that, that's something you need as part of your certification is learning how to work with those types of
challenges.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
So we try to encourage that, but then also at the same time, like Mike said, he almost bit off more than he could chew. When I'm evaluating these initial design concepts, I try to evaluate the student as well to make sure it's not too much for their skill set at that level.
That was kind of your meal ticket, though, in class, which made it great to learn things from you, though, is that you made it very clear that, like, this is the time and space to make these kinds of mistakes because we have the tools, the materials, the knowledge, and the support for you to do the problem solving and figure out how to get back from that, to get your project back on track, to still be proud of it, to have a finished product to show.
Oh, yeah.
And go, like, and just bestowing the knowledge.
But is it hard to kind of rein the kid back in?
It is a little bit to probably a degree, but if I can look at the project and say, wow, this would take me 80 hours to build. There's no way with the shop time allotted is enough for someone who's learning to be able to build that and finish it like successfully.
And there's no extra shop time that we could get
into. No, because your schedule is full.
Yeah.
You got to draw that fine line.
Plus you got every other classmate in there too as well, right?
So, oh, absolutely, yeah. Right.
Yeah, there were days you couldn't get on a machine.
That's what I was figured, right?
Six people lined up ahead of it that got to use
right?
it. It can be, yeah. Yeah. So you gotta work with the student, you know, revise it. We go through revision processes and, you know, make sure it's still what they want because it's their project, their design. Mm-hmm. I'm just there to give my input and my suggestion. So I try to keep it original to that suggestion as possible. But within... them being able to complete it successfully and take it home at the end of it.
You ever get someone who's like, they become a little secretive and they present one and then they build something else?
No, that can't happen.
Can't happen.
You have to stick to the plan because you've already done your
part of it. Your mark is how close it matches your plans.
You're graded to the drawing that you created
to the dimensions, before. Everything. Yeah. Cause
Sneaky, sneaky. Yeah. Okay, all right. I
can't pull a fast one on us.
Over to you guys. So what, you guys remember your first project?
Like, yeah, mine was way back in like the poker craze of the early 2000s. So I built, I still have it. It's in my basement. I'm going to Vegas in July. So a big octagonal walnut poker table with a big 12-inch base that I turned on the lathe. It was pretty cool. Yeah.
So nice.
Lots of fun angles and lathe work and mortise felt, and tenon
for the legs. The felt is still in good shape?
The felt is been replaced once.
Okay. All right.
Because there was a few...
Cigar?
No, more alcoholic beverages that got spilled on it a few times. But it hasn't been used in a long time, but I still have it. It's in my basement in a storage area, not set up. But once my basement's fully finished, I got a spot picked out for it to
it's
go.
It's going to come out and the cards are going to come out.
Yeah, it'll come out. The cards will come out and then we'll be playing Texas Hold'em again in no time. So
nice.
Yeah, so you probably should have started with me because I can't follow them up.
it's not a competition.
So I'm very uncreative. I can't imagine and just like build something. You show me what you want built, I will build it perfectly exactly how you want it. So I had a tough time just trying to figure out what I wanted to make and try and keep the cost down too. And then there is a big disconnect from second year designing it to third year building it, given COVID and everything. And so I didn't even add, like I had designed like a little, I was going to do.
All
little,
of second year was a disconnect. Sorry to interrupt.
I know. Yeah. But that's what happened to this is I was going to do this small little, like a tackle box, but all wooden, very vintage looking. Thought it was outside the box a little bit and kind of with my interests.
I like that. I see it right now. I can visualize it.
Yeah. So I'd drawn it up and I passed second year. I did all the work I needed to do, but then come third year, I found out there was something to do with it. I wasn't allowed to do it, or it didn't just quite meet the criteria.
Yeah.
But I also didn't know in second year that come third year. And I don't know if this is a thing, but there's three projects I think we could pick from the school already had designed that I could build. So I don't.
Oh, so you guys already have ideas?
That was presented to me then. I don't know if that was.
Yeah, we have some standard projects that students have to choose to build as part of the full-time programs, like not just the apprenticeship program, but from the full-time in one of their semesters to kind of get them prepared for their final course where they would build their final capstone project.
Yeah, so I think COVID helped with me being allowed to pick one of those, and it worked out. My mom needed a coffee table. One of them was a coffee table, so I just went with that. So mine's not as cool as theirs.
It seems like I get the sense that a lot of coffee tables are being built, a lot of cabinets are being built. Like, is there something that people are not building that you'd like to see one day?
Well, no, but I mean, I just had a student finish building a really awesome acoustic guitar.
Oh,
We've had
it is great.
Students build violins, harps, that's drum cool. sets.
Holy, now we're talking about
a lot of real musical instruments. Trevor, who was here earlier, he has a very good knowledge and background in instrument making. So he's been super helpful with students with those. What else? Yeah, there's been foosball tables. There's been also
balls out of wood too.
I'm not sure. That's a good question. I'm not sure if he made them out of wood.
I don't know.
I know it was a gorgeous walnut foosball table. I can totally imagine, yeah. Yeah, there's been all sorts of stuff. There's been, you know, liquor cabinets like Mike did, but with thumbprint unlocking to open up and all the electronics incorporated with it. So there's been some amazing creative ideas coming out of the students.
So the technology is there, right?
Technology is starting to get more introduced. I love seeing that in... That's in yours. Projects.
That Look at that,
run.
Huh?
That was the practice run.
Jeez.
99% of that is scraps.
Really?
Yeah. That whole idea started from a roll of wallpaper that I pulled out of the dumpster.
You got to send me that so then I'll just so I can put it on the video on so people can see it. And sure. I like the glass a lot. Yeah. So the back is where the wallpaper is?
I see
the wallpaper
the
now.
The back okay, is actually now. Mirrored.
Actually, so the wallpaper looks very nice.
It looks deeper totally. And it's flocked. It's super textured. Yeah. I got other pictures of that. I'll show you.
Everything okay? You want more water?
I'm good. Thank you.
I guess the students themselves, they come from all across Canada, right?
All over
the place.
International.
Right? Like, I mean, the school itself is known as this hub now, right? Mm-hmm. You guys, and how big is the shop? Like, I mean, it's like every toy's there.
40,000 square feet.
Yeah, plus minus.
Just over
what toy 40, is in 000. There? Are there any toys that are
there? There's over 80 pieces of equipment that students learn on.
There's a CNC lathe that was in there.
That thing was neat.
Yeah. It's awesome. Yeah, we saw that getting set up.
We try to keep up to date with all the current technology and machinery. So, you know, we're preparing them for the current workforce.
Is there razzing between tool brands or there's no razzing?
Not really.
Not really, right? Well, I mean, the last group was like Milwaukee, DeWalt, and then Festool. Whatever worked. Trevor was whatever worked.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, what we have in the shop is we do our research before we bring it in and let people use it. But as far as it, like personal tools go, you know, I always tell them, buy the best you can afford because it's going to last you a lifetime.
I got a different take on that, though. I buy whatever tool I need to use to do the job. I'll buy probably the cheapest one for it. And if I use it enough to break it, then I'll go buy the best one.
It's a good way to look at it.
If I can overpower what that tool is doing and it breaks down enough because I'm using enough, then I'll go buy the best
one. I'm talking about your basics, though, like your hand planes and your chisels and things you're always going to use for a lifetime.
Yeah.
But if it's one tool you need for a specific job and you're not sure if you're ever going to use it, well, then, yeah, you might not go spend $1,000 on it.
You end up at his shop and you borrow
something. Yeah, exactly.
Well, the cool thing with my shop is that tools that I use almost daily are tools that I had to buy.
Yep.
For my woodworking education
still at Colorado
College.
Yep. Yeah.
So I was in a good position where my parents lent me some money to buy some decent tools.
I didn't buy the stool.
Yeah, and I mean, some stuff I couldn't afford good ones, but I have a sweet little East Wing leather-wrapped hammer that is like an $80 hammer that I still use daily, and then I have a really good set of chisels that I've sharpened probably 100 times that I still use all the time.
Yeah.
Since then, I've added so much more, but those basic stuff is, you know, and I've, over the years with my business, I've bought and sold, I don't know, probably 100 pieces of equipment too, because that's something where when I was kind of in between starting full-time at the college and I'd sold my business, that was kind of my job for 4 months, was I just bought and sold woodworking equipment throughout Southern Ontario.
Keep production
and that was
going.
To kind of get, me and Mike talked about this, that was how I funded the tools for my shop for a lot of it, where I would go and buy 4 pieces of equipment and I would keep one and sell 3 and I would sell the 3 for the cost that I bought the 4 and then I got the
good
table saw that I wanted for nothing. I mean, it was a lot of, I was up to Ottawa, I was Windsor, I was all over the place. So
there's always going to be somebody that's going to want it.
Yeah. And it was, you need to know what you're looking at and what it is and what it's worth, and then you can haggle and get a good deal and then put it up on Kijiji and hope somebody buys it for more than you paid for it.
Run with it.
But I mean, we know that it's not necessarily the tool that makes the woodworker, right?
No, absolutely not.
Right. But I mean, you're the youngin' here, right?
Yeah.
But you guys are coming into this industry wanting to be a part of this industry, and you guys honestly feel as if it's the tool that's going to make you the woodworker.
Blame social media for that one.
What's that?
Blame social media for that one.
Yeah.
That's not my mindset.
No, I don't see it, right?
You're right.
Yeah.
That is how a lot of people...
If I buy this arsenal, then I'm going to be an amazing woodworker.
Oh, yeah. He's automatically going to know how to do everything. Yeah.
The amount of people I know that just go out and instantly buy that $1 million Milwaukee pack out full of tools and they're making minimum wage, I'm like, you should probably learn some skills before you have all these tools that you don't know how to use.
You didn't need all of that.
No, you don't need all that. I still have just a bag full of tools and I've gotten where I've gone.
How is the mentorship mentee world of woodworking in the business side of things? Are they there, or are they just kind of aged to become their own mentor?
I think it depends on the workplace.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very much so.
You know, you get some businesses that have a high turnover and some where people have been working there for decades. And those spots with the older generation are more likely to teach and train the newcomers, right? And pass on that knowledge.
Yeah.
And that's what I find. I mean, especially in a custom shop, you're going to get more well-rounded versus just being on a liner in production where you're focused on just one objective.
Yeah.
But I think having the older, more experienced people, if you're around them, you're going to learn more, whether it's intentional or not.
Yeah, that was up in conversation earlier, though. We were trying to figure out, like, where's that... It's kind of a bit of a dissident gap where coming up now, there's less and less of these the old guys around that know everything that we want to latch on to learn everything from as much as we can before they move on, that are few and far between in the workforce as it is, and then being at the college to just latch onto you guys for dear life to learn as much as we can. You know,
eventually we got to let go of that.
So what's where do you like to go from interested to apprentice to proficient to expert level? Is this
there's a slight gap.
I don't know if you're ever an expert though.
No, well, yeah, I mean, you're always learning, absolutely, 100%. But you get to the point though where people are constantly coming to you with like, you know, you suddenly become the old guy in the shop but the new guy is always still learning. Yeah, which is fine. Yeah. He's probably still learning something from the young kids about this trade.
And I hope any trade is that you're, no matter how much you know, you can always, I learn something new every day, whether it's how to not stub my toe on the thing in my shop, or like I told you guys, I learned a new finishing trick that I talked to you guys about lunch at. Like there's lots of
pinky toes there to tell your furniture is hard.
There's lots of cool stuff that you can learn.
But I think there's still some self mentorship to be had as well. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't have that drive to want to improve and want to realize mistakes and better yourself and your own skill set, you're not going to improve that much. Because on a day to day, if you keep making the same mistake and don't learn from it, you're never going
to
get better.
Yeah, eventually you may get to a point where you're going to have to teach yourself how to do it anyways, right?
Yeah, like certain things. Like,
here's the question is like when you got stuck on your cabinet or you guys got stuck on your project, what was the first thought that came to you? Like, do I reach out to somebody that I've met personally, or do I go online and do a Google search, or do like what was the first thought?
I need a beer in a minute.
I think from what I saw with Mike in Mike's project, because I remember helping him on a few things, and he tried to figure it out first for himself.
Yeah,
which is great initiative.
That's the best way to go. No,
absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
absolutely. Unless it really gets messed up.
But, mostly because I didn't want you guys to know I stumbled for a moment.
No. But you know,
that's how you learn, though.
Absolutely. It's like trial and error. You know, if your way doesn't work, then you know. Then he came and said, "Hey, what would you do here? Yeah. Or how would you go about doing that?" And then get that.
You got a minute to look at this. What's your take?
And that's a huge step forward in your own skill set.
And even all the people we went to school with, everyone came from everywhere and all these different skill sets. Like the amount of times Mike and I would bounce ideas off each other for projects.
They bring something different.
Yeah, it could be someone with the same skill level as you, but a different angle just of looking at it. And that could make the world a difference on how you're going to finish something.
How's it navigating the business side of the world? Because you guys all go in and you're all racehorses on learning the skill side. But we all know it's a business.
That's my next apprenticeship. Business mentoring.
It's a business, right? And you're still learning. Like that's a constant learning process, right? It takes a
long time to learn that.
But it's hard for this generation that is so good at trying to absorb that knowledge from the skill, and they ignore the business. But you guys are seeing it in the students as well, too. Like you have to educate them. This is still a business. It's not a hobby. You guys want to make it a hobby? Make it a hobby.
You're taking it from a hobby to a business level.
Which is you can make money off of your skill set, but now you have to navigate, how do I manage this money? How do I set? How do I know what to charge?
Yeah.
How do I produce a profit?
Yeah.
These are all variables for you guys, right?
One of the courses I really enjoyed teaching was entrepreneurship for the 3-year full-time students, and that was basically how to run a small business, and that's what I was doing at the time. Which was great, and it's the same as all the skill
simultaneously
stuff.
Simultaneously running a small business while teaching woodworking.
But, you learn by making mistakes, and you know, it's making the shop is, you know, I screwed this up. I got to get a new piece of wood and do it. I made mistakes running a business too, where this custom piece of furniture, well, I'm going to charge $2,500 for it. And then you know what? It costs $4,000 to make that because I screwed up and I forgot this. And it's like you can't go to the customer and say, "Hey, you owe me another $1,500." It's you learn from that mistake and then you charge more the next time and kind of go from there. And that's something that you again with custom stuff, it's hard because it's a gas is what it is. If you've never done it before, it's a gas.
And that's got to be the number one question I hear from people that are getting in, especially in woodworking or trim carpentry, finish anything. Mm-hmm. What do I charge? I just plainly say at first, you're going to lose money. Mm-hmm. You will not know what your price bracket is in the beginning.
Not at the
you
beginning.
Will learn that.
Yep.
You'll figure out your speed, your efficiency, and you'll learn lessons along the way. As simple as that. So you have to figure out where your entry start point is, and then you'll grow from there.
Yeah.
Right?
You also have to learn that something is worth whatever somebody's willing to pay for it.
Yep.
Because you can build the most beautiful piece of whatever, And if nobody wants to buy it, then you got a $10,000 boat anchor sitting in your shop.
I think
is what it is.
And, so. And some of the more custom creative sides of that, though, is that you can also price yourself into a specific bracket.
100%.
Yeah. That yes. kind of yep. client that's going to yep. come looking for that type of custom piece that's going to be at that standard, at that level. That's
100%. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. But if there's not a market for it, then there's a market for those pieces that you're talking about. Like your liquor cabinet was beautiful. I can give you many other examples of things that people have built that
there still might not
necessarily be that market for it. Yeah. Or you might find one person that's willing to do it. And I did this in my shop too, where it's like, you know what? We built this really cool thing and this customer, you know, paid for it and it was awesome. And then I would build one and put it in my showroom floor. And then it would sit there for 2 years and nobody would buy it. But the thing that I learned from that is like, well, that sat there for 2 years and nobody bought it. But I sold so much other pieces of furniture from that, where that mm-hmm. wasn't yeah. their thing. They said, this is beautiful. It's too ornate for me. Can you do this instead?
The value is
simplified.
So and that's, you know, it's just that trial and error and learning about what it is. And then furniture styles change too. Year to year stuff changes. And then where you are geographically changes a lot too. My shop was in Waterloo. We were about a year to 16 months behind Oakville and Toronto as far as designs and that type of stuff goes, is what I learned over about a 10-year period, is that I would go to the design show in Toronto and be like, this is the new greatest thing. And if I did that right away, everybody would be like, whoa, that's too far out there, until they see it in all the magazines and, you know, social media stuff and all that now. So once it does that 6-month cycle, then everyone's like, oh, this thing's really cool now. I want to get it. But if you do it too early, and where we were geographically, and this has changed now with social media, everything's a little bit different. But that's what I found back in like the early 2010s, is that we were, especially like the color of the year, we were 6 months behind. If I did the color, if I put the color of the year in my showroom right away, it was like, what is this? But 3 to 6 months later, it was the coolest thing.
I thought your projects are dictating all this. Is that not the case? Or are you guys behind the cart? Like, what's going on with that? You guys are coming up with these designs. You're coming up with these. Are they based on the trends that are coming out of other countries or other places?
I think it's what other people see.
Yeah.
What clients are looking for. When they go to a custom shop, they want it because they've seen inspiration mm-hmm. or they need something in their home. But
you just said ideas. It right there. When you go to a custom shop, mm-hmm. people want to ask you what they've seen.
That they've seen somewhere. They've seen on social media.
Custom shop, though.
Yeah. But they want aspects of different. I mean, a lot of what I did was, I want the bottom of this, the top of that, the middle of this,
and then you put it all together.
But I mean, the overall style changes throughout the years too, where like live edge stuff wasn't really popular until like the mid 2000, like up to 2010. And then all of a sudden it took off again. All of a sudden everybody wanted a live edge table again.
Yeah.
Where through the 90s, everything was during the 90s was awful for design. You had two options. You were honey oak or you were golden oak. That was your dining table. That was your kitchen. That was your railing and everything. Well,
wasn't there a bunch of whitewash?
Was a lot of melamine.
Or no, the peach or like the peach.
Yeah, oak that was. Yeah.
What was that all about? That was like
that was 80s, early 90s. That was, a little bit earlier. But I mean, people paid a lot of people like me a lot of money to change that, you know, golden oak dining room table and refinish it a different color and do new chairs and repurpose this. And then a lot of kitchens got done because nobody wanted a golden oak kitchen anymore because designs change. And then that evolves with time and you gotta stay up with all that. So
what do you do your day to day at the shop? You guys are building cabinets.
Yeah. So we're a pretty small shop. Like there's really only three of us on the floor and one sprayer. So basically, I do everything that needs to be done. Depending on what we're doing, we do a lot of furniture. Our main kind of meat and potatoes is like a good quality custom kitchen. So right, I'll go on job site and measure it. And then in the shop, it's a matter of breaking out plywoods. And then someone will run the CNC, someone will run the bander, get that all ready for assembly. I got to cut out and we do 5-piece doors, solid 1-inch solid wood. So I got to break out all that material, put the doors together, sand them, square them, drill them, get them to the spray guy so he can paint them. Yeah.
No MDF?
No. Just the inside panel on the 5-piece door.
But it's great to hear, actually.
Other than that, no MDF. Unless we have like a big slab we need to do or something, we'll do it MDF. But even typically, if we have slab drawer fronts, it's glued up maple.
I know, Nathan, we were talking about, they were doing a lot of U.S. stuff, like sending a lot of... that Neff funky colors and stuff that I Nathan's didn't really connect with. I haven't even seen it. They described it, but I was visualizing it, and I was like, I don't know if I would like that, but that's what the clients are asking for.
Yeah.
But it goes back to, I guess, people are just trying different things, right?
Yeah, people will see something on Instagram, and you have to make it come to life.
Pinterest.
The amount of times I've had Pinterest picture.
So they're showing you a bunch of little things, components, like you were saying. They were just showing you, I want a little bit of that, a little bit of that, and sprinkle a little bit of that.
Well, I had one time, it was a screenshot off Pinterest, sent through an email to my boss. My boss gave it to me, says, build this. I said, what size? What?
Was it made out of pallet wood, too?
What's that?
Was it made out of pallet wood, too?
No. I would have said no to that. But yeah, he just said, build this. I said, well, what size? What this? He goes, I don't know. This is what I was given. And they want this table. So if you can, they said, this is the space it's going in. Make it some, like, just
build it accordingly. It.
Yeah, build it accordingly. And I just, I had was a 1-2D kind of view of a blurry Pinterest screenshot.
It's terrible.
How did it turn out?
Really nice.
Turned out really nice. Were they extremely happy?
Yep.
Yeah, did they hold up the picture that they gave you and like looked at it and go, okay, yeah, you hit it, nailed it, perfect.
I don't know if they held up the picture later on, but it never got sent back. So
that's a plus.
That means,
I'd say they sold. Yeah.
Done.
But that's happened.
How do you guys navigate that? Like, I mean, I know you do really amazing pieces, but you still have to fight the world of Wayfair and, you know, all that crap, right? And obviously IKEA, right? Like, it's just like, that's what homeowners are. Is that a discussion at school too?
A little bit, yeah.
It's like that's the business side of mass production woodworking.
Exactly, yeah. And you know, all the different aspects.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a price point for everything is one thing that I've told people is that this is what, you know, this costs for me to do it or for Gavin to do it or whoever to do it. And if you're not willing to pay that, then there's a different price point for what you're looking for. But if you want the, you know, the quality and, you know, it's not, you're not comparing apples to apples. It's,
yeah,
it's different things. And some people it's tough to get that across. I've had more than probably a dozen customers in the past when I've been selling, you know, dining room tables, and one spouse comes in and is all happy. And then the other spouse comes, oh, I can make that in my garage at home. Like, well, you go to Home Depot. It's like, well, you go to Home Depot, you buy the wood that's not correct and use the tools that aren't correct, and then you have at it.
Is it, and they say that because of the price?
Yeah, because of the price and that, because they just don't understand the difference. And one thing, I think I've talked to you guys about this in class, that
I would have said something if I heard that.
I would have said something really colorful. After navigating that conversation a bunch of times, there's solutions to get through it, and you just justify what you're doing the best you can and then go from there. But one thing that I find frustrating with woodworking on that, you know, kind of end of things is that woodworking is the one thing where anybody can go to Home Depot, Canadian Tire and buy a table saw, the woodworking equipment, and they feel like they can do it. Where I think that same person is a little more timid about opening up their panel at home and changing an electrical breaker or doing some plumbing.
You'd be surprised.
Some aren't, but I think that woodworking doesn't have that same stigma of like, I need to be certified to do this and I need to do this. Because a lot of people are hobbyists, and there's creativity, a huge difference between a hobbyist and a professional.
Yeah. Well, that's where the painting world goes in. You have arguments with painters all the time. You have arguments with like hanging wallpaper, even roof repairs. You know what I mean? Like, I'd love to see a DIY video about doing a pool.
Yep.
Like, see how that works out, right?
But of those same, like, dozen or so customers, I've probably had 3 or 4 of those where 6 months later, they come in and order the table because I don't know if there was an attempt made at home that didn't happen or didn't turn out well or his whatever.
Still stuck to the board.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? So
epoxy.
It's just one of
the epoxy's still curing in the garage.
I think a lot of the time, too, is when you get an expert in to do that job or for you to build that kitchen or whatever it may be, it's not that, you know, if it only takes so much time or material, the customer isn't paying just for that time and material. They're also paying for the years it's taking you to acquire the skills to do that job.
Yeah. Pay me for my experience, not my time.
But they don't factor that in.
Exactly. That connection's lost.
It's the weird thing, though, is like when clients look me, I look at what woodworkers do and the pieces that they create. They're pieces of art. And they have no problem paying a certain amount for a piece of art that they're going to hang. Mm-hmm. Or place, sculpture, whatever it is, right? But when it comes to the woodworking, you're right. They go back to like, because I guess it's all mass produced.
Yep.
They're comparing it to the apples and oranges or something like that. they're not comparing it to other oranges, right?
Yeah.
And if you want that mass-produced piece, go buy it. If you want a custom piece that nobody else has, then that's what.
But that's Michael where the art comes Gavin back do, in. It's like so and so created this. This is a so and so's piece, right? But that's like all the new kids. You guys have to navigate that world where it's like you have to let go, I guess, of the badge of being an artist and being a person now, be a business person now. That becomes a challenge to do that. Like I've had my fair share of arguments with clients where we hired you because of this. We saw all the work that you can create. We know you can sketch and you can do all this other stuff. You can come up with really nice ideas. And then you start presenting these ideas and there's a dollar value attached to it.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, we don't want that. It's too expensive. So dumb it down somehow. And then you start getting into an argument or disagreement saying, well, you guys hired me for this. And I'm giving you what you asked. You got to let it go. That's all I quickly learned. Yeah. Let it go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a business at that point. Fine, I'll give you here. You, I'll build it. Yeah. It's done.
Skilled labor isn't cheap, and cheap labor isn't skilled.
This is what it is, right? But you'll never teach them because they're so ingrained into the Pinterest and the houses and all the other websites that are out there and all kinds of Facebook groups that are out there. And
it's tough trying to sell somebody on something that isn't more than a single serving package of ketchup for a custom piece of furniture. It's a little too much of the culture is kind of single use where they're going to, you know, if they renovate, they're not going to reuse that item that you've created for them.
Yeah.
A lot of times it just gets pitched, unfortunately.
Is there like a fear of you guys just building the same thing over and over and over, just a variation of it? Are you concerned about that? I know guys have reinvented the wheel, charcuterie boards, and they made it into a business, and all of a sudden I walk into their shop, there's probably enough to fill this whole room.
Yeah.
And they just have an assembly line going in. But you look at their face and there's like a face of defeat at that point. But it's a business. They're making money from it. And so it's like, I guess it's a balancing act at that point. You're trying to figure out
100% a balancing act.
The budget, the commerce, the business that they grew, and then also the skills that I'm really good at this. I can just fly these through. Done, 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 done.
I wouldn't say so for myself. I wouldn't put myself in that position to know that I have to pump out.
But I guess a lot of the students that are coming out of that school, they're going to be like that. They're not going to be the assembly line.
Risky, yeah.
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 Because I think you're just going to be soul sucked, right?
Yeah.
That's the concern, though. That's why I got tired of the ideas being just scrapped. Okay, maybe one day that'll be used on a different
job. There's probably a time in any cabinet making shop where no matter how skilled you are, like there's times when I was working in Burlington where I would have to put the boxes together for the kitchen just because that was the time frame. We had nobody else to put them together and we were on a crunch. And I know I still had like a big curved hood vent I had to make, but the boxes still have to go together too. You know, I got to pump out 20 of those, but in some ways it's a bit of a break for a day or two before you get on the creativity of the other
stuff.
Well, like it's nice to have that break, but I couldn't imagine being in a position where I had to make 500 of those. You'd be seeing them in your sleep. Yeah, it's not what I'm about, not by any means.
Are the kids different coming into the school? Have they changed in the last three decades?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean,
more ambitious?
That part's never changed. That's always, some are, some aren't.
I get the sense that everyone that's going in there is like, I've got this huge amount of dreams of wood and I could build
not the world. Not all. You know, you get some students who want to try it because they've never done it and they might like it. Who've never held a tool before. And that's fine. We teach them all the basics right from the ground up. And then you get some that have a lot of experience.
That's in the full-time woodworking program, though, right?
Like
apprentices are coming in a little bit more prepared.
I guess if we need to specify, apprentices are totally different.
They're fully educated in Festool.
They're already working. They're already working in a wood shop. That's so kind of fun, this is a total different mentality.
You could see the difference between, because the shop was big enough that there'd be the full-time class in there as well doing a project.
And there'd be two or three
of them going through, and you could see them breaking materials down, figuring out what they were going to do with stuff, and we were already done doing the same thing.
But you had double the amount of shop time each class.
Yeah.
Or each week.
But I think we were just production-wise, we were faster at doing.
Well, you've already got that.
Because we were already in the shop, but had the real-life, real-world experience
being
in
the shop doing it. Yes, and that contributes to your skill set right off the hop.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
But we get a lot of students who don't know if that's what they want to do. And this is kind of
They're still discovering?
Yeah, some are still discovering. Really? Yeah, there's some students who start, and then they realize this isn't for me.
The point of it is that they, like, so the full-time students sometimes would seem almost intimidated by the apprentices, even though we had less class time.
What way?
And then like, a bench, and they're like, how did you make that so fast?
Right, we'd be buzzing around them throughout the shop.
Yeah.
Really?
Especially our group. So, the five of us, I mean, maybe you can speak to it, but I feel we were very efficient, very successful at it.
Apprentices would come in with, 6 months to a year of work experience in that field. Mm-hmm. We had first-year woodworking students that would come in, and some of them had never touched a screwdriver, a chisel, a hammer, anything. Yeah. And I think that was a difficult position for me, and I think you would agree, James, where do you dedicate your time? It was a hard thing for me. So I would have a third of the students that knew nothing. I'd have a third that knew a little bit, and then you'd have a third that were really good. But the bottom third are going to suck away 85% of your time if you let them.
Yeah.
And it was that balancing act of where do I dedicate my time to the students to get everybody harmoniously working together. Yeah. And the nice thing is that they would all catch up pretty quick and it was the same thing with apprentices too. I mean, there was stronger students and then there was weaker students, and the weaker students, you needed to devote a little bit more of your time to help them with what they were doing. And that's where it was really nice to see, once you get past that kind of first year shop class, is that you would get kind of mentor students, where you would get a student that knows a little bit more that would actually help you without you even asking them. You'd all of a sudden look over and be like, oh, well, you know what? Right now, Mike is helping Timmy with Jordan, what he's doing, or whoever. Yeah. And then that just kind of happens, which is, I think, the kind of cool part of education. And
you get some of those students who just flow into that leadership role.
Exactly.
And naturally go help students who are a little bit further behind. Yeah,
I can see that.
Which is totally awesome. Happening.
Yeah. Because you've already learned those skills and then you want to share.
Towards the end of the apprenticeship time in class, there was enough of the full-time students that would see you after a couple of years and be like, oh, you're back. Hey.
Can I pick your brain?
Yeah. Do you mind showing us how to set this up again? And there was a bunch of students that would do that towards the end. Well, like stuff wasn't clamped and glued and I could clean up and kind of kill some time. And there'd be half a dozen of them like, I can't loosen this. Can you show me how? Sure. Over we go.
Is there an increase in female?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Every year we're seeing more and more,
which is great.
It's phenomenal.
Yeah.
There's a lot of great programs running to make it our industry more aware to the younger generations, and a lot of it's directed towards young women. And
I don't know this, but I just assume that maybe there's more women going into woodworking than other trades. I don't know though.
I don't know. I have no idea. There's a lot of electricians and plumbers.
Yeah, that's right. I see a lot of them there.
I think it's awesome. Our student enrollment, when I took the course back in 2006, there was 2 out of 106 students.
Wow.
And what's now it today? 20 to 30%.
Yeah, we had one. That's what I'm saying is that it's more. Yeah. Ours.
Because you know, all the other trades, you're at about 3-4% of the workforce.
We're 20 to 30%.
That's huge.
Enrollment now.
It's huge.
It's awesome.
Third year is 15 of us in class. I think 5 or 6 of them.
I was just about to say that. Yeah.
Like the almost 50 in the apprenticeship.
About a third of them were
female. That's not the case with every trade.
Programs are a lot less. But at the same time, at home, I actually don't know any female woodworkers. I know more framers.
I was just going to say, I don't see any social pages.
Yeah, I don't know any personally, other than the girls. Maybe they're quiet
and they don't want to show, and they're just running a business. We don't know. Maybe. I mean, just because you're not on social media doesn't mean you're not successful, right?
Yeah.
Of course, it's almost the other way around, right?
Exactly. I mean, they're running women in skilled trades programs. They're running Jill of All Trades, which is a huge event going now internationally. All sorts of outreach, and it's working. It's drawing more females into
the educational incentives for them a little higher as well too.
Yeah,
there's the bursary that the government offers for the tradespeople, it's almost four times the amount for girls in trades.
Because
there's $1,000 a year.
Each year it was a grand.
Each year, but for girls they were $4,000 a year.
Tool wise,
your
Festool.
Festool, DeWalt, King. I got a mix of stuff. Mostly DeWalt, but
mostly DeWalt. What's yours?
Depends on what tool.
Whatever works.
I have different preferences for different
Veritas.
Tools.
Veritas.
You know, for like sanders, I like.
Who's Merca. The leader in sanders?
I like Merca.
Merca.
Like
Merca.
For a hand sander,
yeah,
I like Merca the best.
What about a belt sander?
Like hand belt sander.
Makita.
I've only ever used the old Makita.
Yep. Big, the bullet, everybody.
Makitas. Yeah.
See, like, there's certain brands. Yeah, I know.
I just got the DeWalt cordless belt sander.
Exactly. That's
the 5 amp hour battery on it. You know, haven't got to try it on anything yet, but looking forward to it.
Yeah, how does that work when you're in a tight spot?
There's no cord. It's just a battery.
Yeah, it's got a block on top of it.
Ergonomically, though, I don't find it's in the
way. I have a low profile Makita, and I love it. Yeah. Belt sander. It goes anywhere. I can almost hold it like a belt sander, like a regular palm sander.
Viratex lipping planer.
What other? So what would be? No, you're not going to use planers. No. Oh well, yeah.
We have lipping planes and electric love planes for scribing and
install.
Well, it was surprising to hear Mitch say Milwaukee. He's a Milwaukee guy.
We've got a lot of Milwaukee stuff at school.
Yeah.
Like a lot of cordless nailers. Marketing.
That's what that is.
I do like their cordless.
Just because
nailers.
The truck shows up and it accidentally just unloads. The
23 gauge nailer.
Their cordless nailers are better than most.
Really?
Yeah, that I've used yet.
They're very nice.
Okay, all right. But they're too heavy, in my opinion. Still, I like pneumatics. I'm sorry, I like air.
Sure.
That's just me, right? But what are you?
Makita.
You're Makita.
I'm Makita. Yeah.
Where's the family from?
What's that?
Family from Eastern Europe?
Nope. We're Quebec. Family from Quebec. So.
0-2 today, man. Like, wow. The flooring guys or the trim guys are mostly Eastern European. You know, you get Croatian, you get Serb, you get Ukrainian, and they're all Makitas.
Yeah.
They're always Makita guys, right? So what do you got in your shop? Well, you got the big boy toys as well.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's got hand tools. So for hand tools, I would say the majority of my cordless stuff is Makita. I do have some DeWalt stuff because I went and splurged on some machinery, and DeWalt had a good sale of spend this much and you get a free driver. So I have two DeWalt drivers. I got a DeWalt track saw, and I just kind of did my research. Traditionally, at my old business, I was a Makita guy, tried and true. I took a picture once where I dumped all of my Makita tools out on a bench, and I had, I think, like 25 drivers, 25 drills. Just, you know, they wear out after a while, and then you buy another one, or the batteries or whatever. So
why do we hang on to
spare parts?
I still got NiCad.
Exactly, spare parts are really nice. And truthfully, the reason reason I'm a Makita guy is from a past professor at the college, which was Martin Gringwis.
Oh yeah,
where he had in his big tool chest that he had, it was the coolest thing ever. He had every variation of Makita cordless drill that evolved. So he had a 7.2, a 9.6, a 10-point whatever, and all this. And I don't know if it's true or not, but what he told me is that, because back then it was like Makita or DeWalt were like the two. There was not a whole lot of other ones.
Black
and Decker. And I've heard this from a few people, is that DeWalt was what kind of Milwaukee is now. They're a marketing company, where that's why their stuff is yellow and flashy and everything, is that you can see it. And that Makita and Bosch were made that kind of off greeny teal color, because if you're using it all day, every day, that color, your eye doesn't see as much and it kind of blends in and it doesn't bother you over time. Where if you're using a bright yellow tool in front of you.
It's true.
Again,
interesting.
I don't know the validity of it, but it made sense to me, and that's why I became
a Makita guy. Site when it was buried, right? Somewhere you're looking for it?
Yeah, probably. But I mean, we're in a shop, right? We're a little bit different, so. But I still like Makita tools. I got DeWalt. I have some Festool stuff when you need to step up to something that's ultra fancy and it's the only brand that makes that specific thing that you want to do. And then you go and spend the thousands of dollars for it.
Yeah.
Domino, the Festool edge bander. There's a few things that I have.
Yeah, the handheld edge bander's pretty legit.
It's fantastic. Still don't want to spend $7,500 for it.
Yeah, they're expensive.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's some jokers out there that are buying certain tools today and just keeping them in the box as if they're hockey cards or something like that, and thinking 20 years from now,
could be.
It's going to be worth mint.
I don't know, the battery's going to be dead by then.
Yeah. Obsolete, solar powered.
But like that's the trade itself, right? That's how they are. They're so loyal to those kinds of brands sometimes. Yeah. But I like you guys said it. We always said it. Whatever works best for you. Mm-hmm. On what you have to do, the project.
The big thing now with the battery operated stuff is you're kind of get committed to one brand.
Yeah.
Because if your budget doesn't allow you to spend extra money on all these batteries, once you buy one tool and a couple batteries, then you're going to go buy the bare tool. And it's like, well, do I buy another Makita tool where I have these batteries at work, or do I venture out
into another brand? How many chargers do you want to bring to the job site?
Exactly, yeah. Like, how many different things? So I have two right now, and it's honestly a pain in the ass sometimes when I'm like, all right, I need my Makita batteries for this, and I need DeWalt batteries for this, and everything. So sometimes, like, you know what?
Yeah,
DeWalt's staying at home today. We're just going to be a full Makita guy today on site. So.
Sure.
Is there loyalty on glue, on oils? I know you were mentioning last time.
Rubio. Rubio's my jam.
But then glue-wise?
Not really.
Glue's glue.
Glue's glue. As long as you're using the right glue for the right job.
Tight
Bond. There's all different types
of glues. I like Tight Bond.
Tight Bond's a good brand. Helm Bond, they're a good brand.
Helm Bond, yep, fantastic. Got buckets of that in the shop.
You know.
Yeah. Abrasives? Sand?
I love Sia.
You know it?
Yeah.
Really, yeah?
Yeah.
Even with like a festival and also Merca, I mean, that's where all the money's being made, eh? All these accessories, all the grids and the boxes, and you start seeing the price tag on that box, you're like...
Oh, paper, yeah. Even sandpaper for all those brands, yeah. Yeah, if you buy their brand,
you gotta go to your industrial supplier.
And that's where you
buy
go.
Buy the 100 pack.
But the new kid is always buying that first box, and 100%. Until he meets somebody else, go back to mentorship, and they tell you, listen, kid, don't buy that box.
Yep.
Go over here.
Yeah, you don't need that. No,
most paper companies are good now, though. They'll have the hole patterns to match, or the mesh paper, or all that stuff.
Unless there's a patent on it, then yeah.
Yeah.
I do like the woodworking world, how you guys, I think out of all the trades out there, are more willing to share and educate versus trying to hide. But it's internally, though. You guys, I almost don't want to share to other trades. Like if an electrician or a plumber comes at you and starts picking your brain and what's your secret, what's your tip, what's all this other stuff. But if you're a woodworker and you kind of talk to that person, they're like, oh, you're a woodworker. Okay, you're one of us, right? We'll give you some secrets, right? Mm-hmm. Is that not the case or am I?
I've never heard that. I'm an open, Mike knows this. I'm an open book no matter who I talk to.
Jamie will just tell you what.
I'm happy to share with
here's the truth you need to know.
I think the cool thing is on site too is working with the other trades and, you know, there's been times where I've, you know, forgot a tool and a plumber lends you his, you know, dull worn out Milwaukee hole saw that you cool. gotta borrow. And there's been times when, you know, like you might have something that works better for what they're doing and you can do it, especially drilling through cabinets and that. I always prefer to drill my own holes through for dishwashers and everything else because my hole saws are razor sharp and theirs are not sometimes.
Because they hit a nail or two.
I think that's a different
a
different approach to sharing is maybe just understanding a little bit more what the trade needs to do to not set the next guy up for failure, to not look at it and go, that's not my job. I don't have to worry about that. To kind of cater to like what you need to do to then drill the hole through this cabinet for the dishwasher that's got to go in. So, you know, hey man, where's your hose going to sit? Because I want to, like, if I can drill this hole for you ahead of time so that you're just setting up.
Some of it's working with trades that have the same mindset that you do too. And I've worked with both of them and now I work on jobs that are through, you know, either construction companies or designers, whoever, that have trades that work similar to what I do, where I think as long as you're out for the best result for the customer and not the best result for you.
For you.
Yeah. So if I can do something that, like you said, is going to make your life a little bit easier and your job a little bit better, and it takes me an extra 5 minutes, I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
And I appreciate when other trades do the same thing for you. Mm-hmm. And with woodworking, like when we're installing kitchens, there's lots of opportunities to do that, which is, you know, maybe leave the kick plates off so that they can run whatever water lines they need to easier without doing this and that.
That's the communication.
And there's
communication between trades.
100%.
Some places won't do that, or they'll use a third-party installer who is just shows up on the day.
And he's only there for that one day.
Doesn't care what the boxes are and looks like he just has the plans. But I think some of that comes earlier from being at school with you guys and learning kind of the ins and outs and how of all this is going together and go, you know, leave your rail, you know, you may want to make it a little bit bigger because somebody's going to put a hole through that to put a junction box in behind that. So give them something to screw to.
And that's all.
So understanding that and developing that knowledge and that style and then having that confidence so that when you are with that trade later on, you're going to know a little more what they're talking about.
Or the biggest one I always run into is you always shorten up your top drawer in your island because when they put a outlet up, they've got a spot to actually put that box.
You don't have to pull it apart.
And again, that's just pre-planning.
That's communication. Pre-planning, but there's been times you go into a kitchen and it's just a run-of-the-mill pump them out. That's not considered. And then the electrician's like, well, I got to cut a hole somewhere, where can I put it?
They MacGyver it.
Yeah. They MacGyver it.
It's planning. But the other thing, too, like with cabinets, my countertop guy always liked me because for sink cabinets or vanities, we would turn the back rail down so it's with the back. So the cabinet's still structured properly. And then the front wheel, we would make a little bit smaller. So he's not hacking with a jigsaw
to fit that sink
ugly
in.
Cut out of it. Yeah. And then again, that what it comes down, what's best
first
for the homeowner.
Full of sawdust.
I don't want the countertop guy to have to hack all that out after my finished cabinets are in, my doors are on, everything's there and pretty. I don't want him to get dust and stuff everywhere.
But that's what I'm saying. That like learning that from you guys early on in school almost put you in a position to have an open mind to network with some of these other trades on the site, getting the real world experience.
And the nice thing is if you can make it easier for them, they're going to be like, oh, Mike really knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
When I'm on site and they say, hey, do you know a cabinet guy?
Yeah.
Who are they going to suggest? The guy that makes his life a lot easier or the guy where he swears every time that he's got to, you know, hack this cabinet apart to get what we knew was going to go in there. And some cabinet guys, I've talked to them where I'm like, why don't you turn these rails? This is how we do it. We don't care about anybody else.
Yeah. It's just a networking capital to be able to spend on.
Here's a scenario. And I'm just curious about how long the person should be put into the penalty box just in case. So here's a scenario. You were quoted to do a job. You didn't get it because your price was too high. So they hired somebody else. So they were doing the work on the inside, but you got the job to do the outside because the price for that was fine. Doesn't matter what the work is, but at some point the inside guy comes out and starts using your saw.
Nope. That's a no-no. No.
Sorry.
No way.
No, batteries are coming home. Plugs are getting cut off. Yeah. Not happening.
So he's not even going into the penalty box. There's just going to be a crate made for him.
That's the firing squad.
Wood should have priced it higher so he could afford some tools.
No, because that recently happened to somebody I know, and he took a picture of him on his saw, right? He asked, like, can I just make this one cut in front of the client? And he was like, you didn't hire me to do the job, but now the person you hired is like using my saw to do the work. Client education. I think the client should go into the penalty box at that point.
Yeah.
But those are the funny things. And I like that you're saying that about the networking thing, because I think a lot of young woodworkers are intimidated to speak to other trades on site. Mm-hmm. Like it's one thing to be in the school environment and then get a job and then all of a sudden get into the ferocious environment of a construction site with all the trades there and just go up to the person, not necessarily they're always taller, but they're just bigger in their mind. Yeah. And there's like, where do you want me to do this? Or how do you want me to do this? How do we work together?
Yeah.
And they probably don't know how to communicate that way. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, how much installation did you do when you were
tons?
Yeah. So I think we can probably all speak to it. There's nothing worse than getting a vanity or some built-ins against the wall and then having some electrician go, I was supposed to get some plugs on that wall today. And you got to pull half the thing apart, or they're going to blow a hole in the back of one of your cabinets just to pull a plug through. It's not difficult to kind of approach one of them on the site while you're working on the bathroom or the laundry room or what have you.
Just to be able to go, going to be requiring a driver or something.
Yeah. Hey, man, I'm scheduled to do this tomorrow. Like, should I start on this side so you can pull? Because I don't see your plug down here, and I'm going to have a box in front of it in like 12 hours. So, you know, just a heads up, I'm going to be here. Or, you know, what can I do to make this easier for you so I don't have to pull my stuff apart and I can have a finished product go on the wall? Just
communication. That's
just simple communication.
Simple as that, right?
It's a little bit of rapport. It's a little bit of humble kind of approach to it.
Everyone's got to get along. Simple as that.
Right? He doesn't want to have to go through all the work of having to blow a hole through something, right? Because if he damages it to the point of no repair, then all of it's got to come apart. He may have to pay for it.
It always bugs me when you spend the time and effort to actually install something correctly, perfectly the first time. You triple check the numbers. Everything's all
flush.
Set
it's square.
And oh, by the way, take it out for a second. I just got to get back in there.
No, sorry.
Never goes back is good.
No,
it never goes back in the same spot.
So you back those screws out, everything comes apart.
It doesn't change, but it never goes back as good.
The second time it goes in faster, but it never as good.
No, it's not as good.
The best is when the other trades take it out for you without telling you and then try to put it back in.
That's penalty box.
Another box that's going to be made for them.
I had a countertop guy do that one time.
Really?
Yeah. Full solid oak face frame vanity, and he templated it wrong, but apparently we installed our cabinets wrong. So he took it upon himself to unscrew them all, MacGyver them so they fit his countertop, and there's boot marks all over it, cracked face frames and screws blown out the front of face frames.
Wow.
And I had installed it by myself and took lots of pictures of it.
You sent me that. Yeah. I remember.
Because I was like, fuck, I did a damn good job on that. So I took lots of pictures. And then later on, contractors like, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
I said, well, here's the pictures from the day I installed it. Here's the date of that. What time did the countertop guy come in? And yet, line it all up. Sure enough, countertop guy did not get his contract for that job.
Penalty box, man.
Yep. That's suspended.
It's just the realities of construction, right? Like anybody that's getting into the game, they're going to come across these situations, right?
Yeah.
So you just got to know how to handle them.
The painters and drywallers probably hate us when you nick a wall with a box on the way in.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. But that's easy to fix.
It is.
It's drywall. It's
pain in the rear. But drywall.
Take it to the corner. Don't do a spot.
I always take it to the corner. I always buy the painter's coffee.
Because you know what's coming.
Sometimes. Yeah, because then when I dig a wall, sometimes they can't get too mad at me.
Sometimes.
What haven't you guys built yet that you want to build, or I guess family might be asking you to build? Is there anything coming on the table?
You just put the monkey bars on the side of the shop. Should be good.
Monkey bars?
Yeah, for my kids, I did a set of monkey bars in the back. That's not anything.
I always wanted to build like a wooden rock climbing wall or something, like pegs.
Cool. Those are fun.
That'd be kind of fun to do, right? Yeah.
I want to build my grandparents had a full-size coffee table that was a crib board on top of it, where it was like 3 feet by 4 feet. So that's one of my projects that I'd like to do for myself down the road sometime, and not on a CNC machine. I'm going to drill every one of those however many hundreds of holes by hand and kind of do it old school.
Nice.
It'll be fun.
That's a few weekends.
At the end of that.
Yeah, probably. But
any other projects?
I got one. You know we're going to do?
No, I'm
you're marking
I
right
find
now.
Even I'm marking right now. Yeah, your brain's right now. Elsewhere. Yeah. No, every time we move into a new house, it's we think it's moving ready, but then we decide we don't like any of it, so then we end up changing it all. So it's always working on that instead of the furniture pieces that I really want to build.
Yeah,
everything's on pause right now for personal projects.
Anything on your end?
I just want to finally build something for myself. I don't know what it is yet. I just haven't done all this stuff, and I haven't made anything for myself yet.
So. Your girlfriend's a designer.
Why can't
I? Yeah, so I'm only going to have a big grocery list of stuff to build eventually.
But. Why can't I see more wood planks in the beds of pickup trucks? Why can't we bring that back?
Oh, I miss that.
I would love to.
Mine's carpeted, so I don't like doing that. You saw that.
Oh, I know, I saw the carpeted one, but I mean, the wood plank in the back of a bed of a truck is kind of nice. Doesn't matter if it's a brand new truck. Doesn't matter if it's a Ford Lightning. Just do it. I think it'd be great.
I got wood in the back of my truck right now. Some white oak back there,
yeah. What's the project that you wanted to?
I'm building a desk with curved sides and reeds on the base. So I built it's basically if you took a big column and split it down the middle, so the base is two curved sides, but with reeds down that, and then white oak bent white oak trim around that, and then the drawer box will go up in the middle.
Make things easy, huh? Holy cow.
But then there'll be, so I'm running power to both bases so that whatever room it ends up in, so wherever the plug is, if it's on the right or left-hand side, we'll just run a power cord out from that side. But then there's going to be built-in power supply in the desktop with the lamp that comes up. Everything will be integrated.
Wireless charging?
Wireless charging. Yep, and there's USB-C, a regular USB, and then like an on-off switch because the lamp that I'm spec'd for, it has a dimmer switch built into the top of it. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. I want my royalties.
Sorry?
I said I want my royalties.
Royalties? Okay. Yeah. He brought me the white oak. He had some scrap at the shop.
Favorite species of wood? What do you guys like?
I got three myself. But white oak, walnut, and teak.
I hate white oak.
I love teak.
Teak's nice. Teak is nice. Cherry. Good for everything. I don't know why. I'm indoor classic. Outdoor. I like cherry.
Cherry's nice.
Walnut.
I'm walnut. Bubinga.
Binga.
What's that?
It's a African exotic wood.
Yeah, but what family are we talking about? Like
it's mahogany?
It's a reddish tone?
Yeah, it's kind of a reddish color. Lots of figure.
It's hard to say.
Extraordinarily expensive. Yeah. It is. Yeah.
What's cool. It a board foot a right now?
Things. I made a few. It's like 20-something a board foot.
Yeah.
I made some trophies out of that.
Cool.
For a couple of golf tournaments, I made some trophies where I had some little pieces of bubinga left over, so I did some bases.
Cool.
Actually,
bubinga?
Bubinga.
B-U-B-I-N-G-A. Yeah. Bubinga.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
That reminds me, I forgot Sapele. That would be my favorite.
Yeah, that's a very nice one. I like that one a lot.
I've used it a lot.
That's an expensive one, too.
It's very expensive, but it's so nice to work with. Always looks good.
Go build a deck out of Ipe. Yeah. Little sink.
No.
I like Wenge.
Yeah, Wenge. It's so splintery, though.
It is, but it's beautiful.
Yeah. So it's nice. Almost ebony.
It's very, very dark, but it's got the grain of like white oak, but it's like super dark, dark brown.
I wonder if woodworkers in Africa are like Western cedar. I love Western cedar.
they could. They might.
I love maple.
Yeah. I love maple. Yeah. Like, I don't know, right? I don't know. Because it seems like a lot of the exotics are coming from there.
That's here. Wenge.
That's natural?
That's natural. That's what it looks like, yeah.
Wow.
It's dark. It's rich. It's like coffee really grain. Black.
What is that, 175?
195.
195.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful wood.
Made cigar ashtrays out of that.
Where are you getting it from? The wood shop?
The wood shed.
The wood shed, sorry. The wood shed.
Did James ever get a hold of you?
I don't know. I think we spoke briefly.
Yeah?
Okay. Yeah, I'm trying to remember.
He was interested.
Yeah, no, yeah, totally. I'll get him on the show, yeah. I've been having a lot of conversations lately.
A lot of Jameses around, but yeah.
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 What do I want to ask you? We're getting close to wrapping up, but what else do I want to ask you guys? I'm just curious.
10 questions?
No, that's 12 questions. 12 questions. You've already done it, so you don't have to do it. Unless you change your answers.
No, nothing's really changed.
No, we had some good answers on the last show, but yeah.
Good.
Where do you see your business? Or like, how many more years are you going to do? Are you going to ever get your own business going?
Yeah, that is the end goal, especially. Yeah, that is the end goal. My girlfriend just graduated for being a designer too. So kind of goes hand in hand, cabinetry and designing. So that's the end goal, but I'm still young, so I got a lot to learn before.
How young are you?
23.
Holy
cow. Doesn't seem like it, eh?
I got belts older than you, man.
So yeah, still lots left to
figure out. Were you old enough to drink when we started school? Yeah. No.
No, it's 18 here, isn't it?
In Quebec.
Up north, it's 12.
Hey, easy. He had training wheels on his truck when he'd show up for class.
No, we started in 2020.
2020,
yeah. December of 19 is when I turned 19, so January 2020 is when we started school.
Riley thought I was the teacher the first day of school.
That was hilarious.
Where else, I guess, across Canada, who else is doing schools like you guys? Like, I'm trying to remember.
Alberta's
got some schools. Good. Yeah, what are they?
Got some, I forget the name. They've got a great school. BC has a great school. I connect with those people anytime our students make it through Skills Ontario, Skills Canada, those types of competitions. 2 years ago, I got to go with one of my students. He won gold in provincials, and he went to compete against students and apprentices across all Canada, and he placed silver. But they were great students from BC, from Quebec, from Alberta. Those were the main ones that we were competing against in cabinet making.
Yeah.
Other provinces or territories didn't have as big a presence or compete in our competition
east,
at all.
On the East Coast? I don't know if there'd be any. No, eh?
Not for cabinet making.
No.
No. It was only Quebec, BC, and Alberta.
You guys ever have some conversations going on with the Europeans or even the UK and woodworkers out there?
One of my colleagues, he's from Germany, and that was kind of his background. He got his education over there. No, Richard Brookhitter.
Okay.
It's a different way of doing things over there. I think there's a lot to be learned.
Mm-hmm.
From the way European styles are, they're also all in metric here. You know, we're in Canada, we're supposed to be in metric, but it's all imperial, but we got to teach both and work in both because a lot of machines are coming over from Europe, so they're all metric.
Yeah.
So it's.
I struggle with the metric on
Festool.
In class.
Festool's all in metric.
Festool's all metric.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all metric. So we got metric. We'll have, you know, regular fractional imperial measurements, you know, reading a tape measure, those kinds of things. Then a lot of the machines are decimal inches, so converting from fractional to decimal inches.
Hmm.
So it's kind of a three-way.
It's a lot of charts around.
Charts
on the data.
Quick reference charts.
A lot of Siri.
Yeah.
Okay, but even she gets it wrong.
No, students can't use their phones in the shop. We tell them to put them away.
Oh, no phones.
It's part of your mark in the final.
No cheating, no phone.
No.
Oh.
No. If
I'm up for the challenge.
Shop, that's a distraction. You're going to get hurt.
Yeah.
But they got to wear a headset, though. They could be listening to the podcast or listening to
it. Oh, no earbuds.
No earbuds.
No.
You can have hearing protection on, but
no music. Yeah, no music or anything going on.
But you got to have hearing protection, though.
You don't have to.
But not blue. Or it's not loud? It's got to be loud in there.
No, they're not exposed to it for long periods of time. Okay. For a long enough period of time for it to be mandated by our safety committee.
Is there any risk on sawdust?
We have an excellent sawdust collection system.
Shop. I'm not talking about like a plume, like you're walking through a mist of it, but I mean like a little bit of air is fine.
A tiny, I would say only when you're hand sanding. Everything else, there's
that's it, right?
Even that was on a downdraft table.
Yeah. Dust is very minimal unless you're using a miter saw.
Yeah.
Or the manual. Even that
could have a shroud, but still.
But then, you know, people can wear masks if they want. Yeah. Dust mask.
It's a blast valve that opens up. Anytime you turned on a machine at school, there's a valve that would open up to allow for the dust from whatever saw.
Just go right. Would open and turn the dust collector on.
Yep.
Suck it all up.
Are you allowed to return to school and use the shop if you're...
No,
kick out. Gone.
Yeah, it's done.
World.
Yeah. Unfortunately. No, it's all for insurance.
Right? Unfortunately. Really? I'd be running a business out of the school.
Yeah. Not even like if it's like in the nighttime or something, off hour? No,
eh? I can't be alone in the shop. Safety
hitch. What
safety
if the, if it's the guy that he's the safety guy comes with you? No way.
I doubt it.
That's why I go see
Jamie. Like they used to have continuing education courses at night. I don't know if they still do. And that's where you could take that course and basically use the shop with a supervisor and then build whatever you wanted. But I don't think since COVID, I don't think they've had that course anymore.
It hasn't come back
yet. Yeah.
And you're a Red Seal cabinet maker, right?
Yeah.
How many hours is that for... Is it the same as for carpentry?
It's like 7,280 or something.
A little
like
less, eh? So. Yeah. Okay. You guys are all written?
Yep.
Yep.
You too?
I haven't written.
No, you haven't written yet? No. You going to write?
Yeah, eventually. If I can too busy building stuff. I do need to do it, to be honest. I do.
Why do you need to do it?
To make it all worthwhile.
To make it all worthwhile. It's just, but it's a non-mandatory trade for some reason.
No, but if you ever want to teach, it's a credential.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fair. Fair.
You get that cool little piece of paper.
Yeah. Yep. You were you a Weston Family Scholar as well when you were in? No, you weren't you? No.
Oh, they didn't have it back when I was there.
Okay. I thought you were for some reason. Okay.
I got a couple other things, not that though.
You made it pretty far in the competition though, didn't you not?
For Skills Canada.
Yeah, for Skills Canada. Yeah. Cool.
I've never been fans of competitions, when it comes to any kind of skills or any of that.
I think that's why I never did it. I didn't like the pressure, everybody watching.
Yeah.
So I got to hand it. Like, I get pretty involved now with the competitions and running it at our college and then judging at provincials.
And they're handling it well?
They handle it amazing considering some students are thrown in 2 weeks before their teacher says, hey, you're going to go represent our school. And they try their best. They do great. And it's like, wow. You know, love seeing that.
I just figure it takes time. Like, I mean, like, I wasn't the fastest GC or whatever, but if I was doing woodworking, I wouldn't be the fastest one.
Mm.
I think sometimes it's just a matter of looking at the plans and seeing what your cut list is going to be like and then looking at the pieces of wood. Because when I did it the 1 year, and I was too old to do anything with it, right? Because there's an age cap.
Yeah, there's an age limit.
But the pieces of wood that you got, you couldn't cut, like, both of your sides out of that one piece. You had to do a side and an end, and then the other piece was another side and an end.
It's a lot of critical thinking.
Yeah. To look at it and visualize what you needed to cut out to yield that piece of wood, because you only got a certain amount of wood, and then if you messed up a cut,
you lose points
to go back to get another piece.
For the skills, too, it's not about doing it fast. It's about doing it correctly.
Correct.
Yeah, the student that did it fast and got it done,
but didn't necessarily
not one measurement was anywhere near correct, they're not going to win.
Yeah, it's a good time.
I'm just curious, before we do the 12 questions, Gavin, your circle of friends, they're all trades, woodworkers,
hunters,
lawyers, doctors?
I'm actually the only woodworker, I guess, that I can think of, other than my buddies from school. Other than that, I probably have a buddy in every trade. I could get a house built, no problem.
That's the beauty of it, right? Or you can make friends.
Yeah, exactly.
And you can get a house built.
Exactly. I just put in a kitchen for an electrician buddy the other day, and I already told him that whenever it's my turn to get my house rewired,
he's going to be there.
He's getting the call.
Totally, he's going to be there.
So,
Are you looking forward to your children getting them, or are they going to decide on their own? Or
They can decide on their own what they want to do. They're excited to. They come and help me build the odd little. My son wants to build a wooden sword. Is our next project. A
wooden sword.
He wants to do so.
I want one.
So he takes all my scrap wood and he's practicing his martial arts moves in the backyard. Just, as long as he doesn't hit the dog, then we're okay. So
I want a sword and nunchucks.
Sounds good.
He's jousting with the St. Bernard.
I got a buddy who's a 8th degree karate black belt, so.
Nunchucks.
Get you some real quality nunchucks, yeah. Actually, just he came and took all the scrap siding from my shop. I planed it down to thinner boards, and then he uses it for his class to
break.
Yeah, oh, so that's their cool. Year-end thing is they get to actually have real wood boards that they get to karate chop through. And yeah. kick and everything. Nice. So that's kind of
fun. Nice. So. Yeah. Give him some hard boards, man.
That's what he wants.
Thanks, guys. This has been amazing. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I want to do the 12 questions. You guys ready for this? Or let me share the deets again. Sorry. James, professor of School of Engineering, Technology and Trades, apprenticeship, woodworking at the Dune campus there.
And cool dude.
Sorry?
All around cool guy.
That's a big, how does that fit on the business card? Mm-hmm. Like Trevor had the same thing.
It doesn't.
It's like how many, four or five lines, right? Yeah, what, like a 4 point?
Shorten it up. Yeah.
It's tiny, tiny. Very concise. And then Gavin, it's at GAUDREAULT 13. Yep. And then Jamie, I got Jay Roberts, custom woodworking at gmail.com.
Yep.
And then also on Instagram, it's Jamie Robert, custom woodworking. You can find them. And correct. Everyone could reach out to you guys, ask questions. And obviously, you're probably selling pieces. Did you sell that table? Not yet?
The drafting table? Not yet.
Not yet, eh?
Not yet, no.
You'll find somebody.
No, I didn't. After the podcast, so I've had a. I met with a guy who's a kinesiologist that wanted to get into the trade and sat and had a beer with him to try and figure out what the heck he was going to do. And then a couple other people from like first responders that reached out and were like, heard the podcast. One guy's like, I just do CNC stuff in the garage for fun on the side, but I'm a medic up north and you know,
it's therapeutic, man.
Yeah.
That's what I was telling the other
guy. It's a handful of people that have reached out from the podcast. And we're like, oh, hey, what do I, you know, what do I do?
Happens. That's what I like about it. So, so I've been meeting all you guys, right? So maybe one day I'll have a whack of money and I'll hire all you guys to do a bunch of stuff.
Buy a drafting table.
You can take care of this. You can take care of this.
Sell your drafting table and chair.
We'll go with Gavin when we're on the table. What is your favorite construction or what is your favorite woodworking word?
Word?
Woodworking word.
When stuff's going good or bad.
Depends.
Does it go good more than it goes bad or does it
go bad? It's good.
Usually good. Okay. Usually good.
90-10.
Gavin likes lunchtime.
Yeah, lunchtime's a good one. No, I don't know. Finally, when something's finally done.
It's a good one.
Send it.
Me, I would say mortise and tenon.
Mm.
Well, that one does flow off the tongue, man.
Just such a like a if your therapist just kept on saying mortise and tenon all day, you'd probably be calm and serenity, right? Like
dovetail,
right?
Yeah. Accuracy. Yeah.
Accuracy, I like that.
That's I tell everybody if you're not accurate, it's not going to be right.
The sound of dovetails going together when you're really accurate, just that little crunch when they just they just
or precision, precision.
The wood grain rubbing is just the good stuff.
Least favorite tool.
Least favorite tool. CNC.
Really, huh?
I, as weird as it is being the youngest one here, I prefer traditional hand tool stuff.
Edge bander.
Oof.
No matter how much you set them up and make them work perfect and everything
something
else.
That goes off the rails.
All the places I've ever worked at.
I don't know one that isn't finicky somewhere.
The best edge bander I've ever owned is the little handheld Festool one because there's nothing that can go wrong with it.
Yeah. It's the bandsaw. I don't like the bandsaw.
Really?
Yeah.
I just watch Beekeeper.
Anytime I try to resaw something and it starts wandering and it never comes out. It's just.
It's like you think it's just going to like just dance and go.
Yeah,
and
or it's going to, I don't know. It just doesn't work.
I've had one blow apart on me before, though. The top wheel came off and came out the cover and just.
Really?
Yeah.
Like the blade broke?
It touched my ear on the way by. I had to change my pants. It wasn't a good day. It was not a good day.
What woodworking sound do you guys love?
Exactly what Mike said. When a joint comes together oh so perfectly.
Yep.
For me, the hum of a router going at the correct feed speed matched with, you know what I'm going to say, the spindle speed. Like just that perfect harmonious hum.
How does that happen?
If it's a CNC machine, you got to input it correctly. Okay, if you're running it by hand, it's just finding, and you find it, where if you're running a hand router, it's just that.
Being too aggressive.
I was making dovetail drawer boxes this morning and just finding that sweet little sweet spot where the tool sounds happy.
Yeah.
Don't overwork the blade.
Yeah. I like taking my hand plane and getting that nice crisp shaving of wood, you know, where it's not chattering. Paper? Yeah. It's paper thin. It's just clean.
Man. Favorite beverage?
Beer.
Which beer?
Probably Budweiser. Actually, I should probably shout out Creemore. That's where I'm from. Creemore is a good beer.
Yeah, there you go, Gav.
Looking for a sponsor.
I'd be Sapporo or good cold iced tea is still my.
Actually,
my go-to. I haven't had iced tea in forever.
As much as it costs,
I could do the Sapporo tonight.
Yeah. I still drink it.
I can say coffee all day.
Someone's driving. What turns you on and off in woodworking?
Off, I'd say as of late, installing. I haven't been.
Sites are not ready?
No, I used to install a lot when I first started. Then I started running the shop, didn't install for like 3 years, and now I'm kind of being thrown back into it, and I don't have that same groove. It's all on me just for not having the muscle memory anymore, but that's been frustrating lately. It's just trying to get back into the same groove.
Yeah.
For me, it would be the smell. Just walking into every woodworking shop has its own kind of unique smell. They're all the same, but slightly different.
Does it smell like wood or smell like MDF?
Well, the wood one.
It has to be the wood one.
Yeah.
The wood
one. I hate the smell of MDF.
Yeah. And then the off would be powdered when something just is, for whatever reason, goes wrong and poorly, and then you need to know to walk away and try again later and not try to fix it right then and then. That's the one thing I've learned.
Sorry, that was the off for you, but the on?
The on would probably be when everyone in the shop is, like, everything's just going right. And everyone's working on something, and I know everyone knows what they're doing, and everything's just coming together the way it should.
It's a machine. Yeah.
Off for me would be like unrealistic deadlines from a client.
That's every project.
Exactly. Yeah. But the on is buying new machinery. I love buying new tools, unboxing them, setting them up.
It adds up a lot.
But money's not the question.
Oh, okay. We're not worried about that.
We're not worried about that right now.
Yep. Enjoy the car.
Yeah. No, anytime I get to purchase a new piece of equipment or a tool, I like unboxing it, checking it out, testing it.
Favorite curse word?
Starts with a C.
Nice. That one's been shared hundreds of times.
Can't understand normal thoughts.
I like that.
It's an acronym.
See you next Tuesday.
Yeah. That's another one, too.
Darn it.
Well, you might as well make it a 4. Everyone's using that one.
Are we school appropriate on this
one? Yeah. Okay, that's what it is.
School appropriate.
You could always go the F-bomb or whatever. Nah. Or you could dang it.
That's overused.
Dang
sugar,
it.
Sugar honey iced tea.
Favorite vehicle? Any mode of transportation? Mitch was great. He said his feet.
Really?
Yeah, he's like, all cars have been problems for me. I don't care.
You know how lost that guy is sometimes at school? We'd be texting him, Mitch, where are you?
No, just out for a walk. Probably like a late 80s F-150 is kind of what I want. Something real clean, real classic.
I just saw a recent ad for a 1980 Ford. I don't know. My feed's coming up with the old classic 80 commercials.
Cool.
Yeah. Ford Bronco, eh?
Oh, yeah, the old Broncos.
I was going to reply with a little O.J. Simpson kind of comment. Yeah.
Rest in peace.
Too soon, too soon.
71 Dodge Challenger 440 6-pack.
It's because you have one, though.
No, I sold it.
Did you? Yeah. What color?
I would go probably the canary yellow.
But what was the color that you
used? What I had was a 67 Barracuda.
That's nice too.
I might have a picture of it.
To pay for my new shop and all the expenses
of equipment. There goes the car.
I actually traded that because I had a company truck that I had to give back when I left my last place. There it is there.
Yeah.
Oh, look at that, huh?
So I traded that in for my work truck that I have now. Yeah. But the money is being hoarded away for
another one.
My next dream vehicle.
That's nice.
Nice.
That's nice.
I got to get away from cars and trucks. I'm a motorcycle guy.
Which one?
I
American, Japanese, Europe?
No, Japanese.
Japanese?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. They're reliable, good engines. Right now,
they go too fast and they're too light.
No.
You got a sport bike.
Yeah, it's just a little sport bike.
Which one is it?
My old Japanese.
Oh, wait, you're talking about older.
Well, my first bike I had was a 1980 GS850.
Okay,
thing's heavy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I wanted something a little newer. That thing I had to keep fixing. So
what's the bike for today?
For today, it's just a little Ninja 650. So it's not like super sport. It's just a little.
It's the colors that I'm not crazy about. Why do they give them those colors?
What colors?
Like the greens and stuff like
that. No, this one's like charcoal.
Yours is black and charcoal.
Mine's charcoal.
I just saw one recently. It was like this lime green thing.
There's different colors available.
This is black and charcoal.
But most of the guys are getting these really awful Fast and Furious colors, right?
Yeah.
It's just like, holy cow, man. Like, you're ruining it. What do you guys miss from your childhood?
grilled cheese.
That was yesterday for you.
This morning when he woke up. Cheerios.
Sorry. Lucky Charms.
Yeah. Probably it's Gavin. We can rip on him.
Probably all the hockey I used to play.
Street hockey. Well, that's banned now, eh? Can you play street hockey?
I don't know.
Yeah, on the right street.
I don't think in Toronto you can.
Oh, probably not.
Wow. Okay.
Just free time. Having that weekend of like 2 days of no responsibilities or anything to do.
Yeah. The urgent feeling of panic when it was time to go home. If you notice the street light came on, it was like, I'm too far. I got to go.
I'm going to have to go with Mike on the food thing. I'm going to say my grandma's cookies.
Yeah.
What profession other than your own would you guys like to attempt one day?
I wanted to be a chef for the longest time. Then I worked at a restaurant and said, nope. But I do love cooking, so.
Now you just make the kitchens.
Now I just make the kitchens.
Like blacksmithing for me. Eventually I'm going to get a forge and pound some metal together and make some Damascus steel and make a knife and then not sharpen it. Because I got kids around.
Yeah. You're not going to make
that.
A sword.
I like that a lot.
Not sharpen it.
Yeah. Not sharpen
it. I like that.
I've never thought of it, to be honest.
What else you want to do?
It's not realistic, but... I love boats too. My beginning of my career was building yacht interiors, so I'd love to captain a big boat, maybe like a big yacht.
I said not fighter a, not pilot, so
it's all like, wood interiors.
Yeah,
really? Yeah,
yeah.
Teak,
teak and walnut.
Yeah. Wow.
And polished cherry, like high gloss.
That sounds very cheap.
Oh yeah. Peanuts.
Yeah, just sell it to Connor.
What profession would you guys not like to do?
Anything that is confined to an office for me.
Yeah, I'm probably in the same boat office. On that. I got to be hands-on.
Yeah, computer, I can't be sitting all day. It's got to be, I have to be walking around, up and about.
Family law.
Family law.
Last question, if heaven exists, what would you guys like to hear God say when you arrive at those pearly gates?
That took a hard turn. We're talking about woodworking.
Hey, he was a carpenter back in the day.
Yeah. I have no idea. Maybe you guys go first.
Here's your favorite drink and all of your family and friends that you want to see that are up here.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Probably something along the lines of, yeah, being able to see everybody you've lost over the years. You know, just being able to reconnect. And
yeah.
Yeah, probably the same boat, something along the lines that you did good. Just, yeah.
Your time's up.
Yeah.
That's it. Thanks. Thanks, guys. Thanks for sending us out. This has been a blast, man.
You're welcome.
I've been talking to all you guys and all the skill set and everything.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
Yeah.
That's it. We're all done.
Cool.
Awesome.
Cool.
Ready, Angelina. Thank you.